Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
From WABE in Atlanta, this is a special edition of Closer Look. Can y'all hear me, first of all? We are broadcasting live from Decatur, Georgia, kind of inside, outside the patio of the lovely Golden Drops Cafe. It is our monthly series, Coffee Conversations with Rose Scott. I am Rose Scott, and it's a packed house. And as always, we are so appreciative to be in the community because that's kind of what we do at WABE. It's part of our commitment. It's part of what we owe you, the community. You all have always been so gracious with your donations and with all the love and support you show. So this is our way of not giving back. It's what we're supposed to do, which is be a part of the community. And for today's conversation, we're going to focus on the quality of life issues for Georgia's Latino population. It's important that we make sure voices that sometimes don't get enough platforms and media, that we do our part to do that. So we are honored be a part of this today. And also, there's a coffee named after me. I mean, look, you know, it comes with the job, right? It is I believe it's a Rose Scott Mocha Mint Latte for today.
That's correct.
Something like that. So go on in, get your Rose Scott Mocha Mint Latte, soy milk, I don't know, oatmeal milk, whatever you want. It is the special for today. They didn't know that. I just told them that. So, you know. But in case you don't know, Georgia is home to nearly 1 million Latinos, accounting for about 9% of the state's population. And actually, it's among the top 10 states with the largest Hispanic population. And we want to know how things are going in the community, from small businesses to workforce development to education. It's all very important. So today's conversation is solely focused on that. But as we do with every coffee conversation, we start with the people behind the coffee. I am honored today because I'm going to begin today's coffee conversation with my man, Victor Ramirez, who, first of all, thank you so much for opening Golden Drops to WABE and Closer Look. Thank you.
We are here for that. Thank you.
Now, before we get started, let's get the small stuff out the way. The special for today, the Rose Scott Mocha Mint Latte. Now, this coffee bean is sourced from El Salvador, correct?
From El Salvador.
What's the backstory here? How did all this come together?
In 2014, I met here a guy from El Salvador. We were introduced, and it was a great coincidence that, you know, I was planning the opening of Golden Drops, and he comes from a coffee country, mm-hmm. Alejandro Mendez, with him and his three monkeys, because they call themselves Four Monkeys Cafe. So we have gotten the training to develop this part of the business here. Alejandro is the 2011 World Barista Champion.
Really? Mm-hmm. Now, there's something else that folks need to know. You started way, not just cross town, like around the world. You started in China.
That's correct.
There's a story here.
There's a story about behind that, yes. The first opening of Golden Drops Cafe was in Beijing, China. In 2015, I quit my job of 17 years at a college. I was the assistant to the vice president of that college. And I decided to become an entrepreneur and opening this business. And instead of, as I was planning, opening in here, some friends, you know, convinced me, and I said, you know, let's do it in China. I went there, and in 2015, December, I remember, December the 12th, we inaugurated Golden Drops Cafe in Beijing, but it was only open until February 2016, when we closed in the last week of this month, of that month, and we came back to Atlanta, and we decided to open it in here.
What happened?
What happened, I love the Chinese culture, mm-hmm. and the Asian culture in general. But to be honest with you, it is very difficult to do business in China.
Okay.
Because of the regime.
Sure.
And I have to be, I mean, I'm going to be blunt, honest with you.
I understand.
By one side, people, I love, you know, people's welcoming. And they are humble. They were delighted to have a Latin coffee bar in Beijing. But on the other side, it was tough to get, you know, everything running like the way we wanted with all these restrictions of that regime.
Yeah.
Very, very, a lot of restrictions. So I decided to close down and come back here.
You came back home.
Mm-hmm.
Why this community? Why this location for Golden Drops?
Why the cousin of my cousin, she was the wife of my only cousin in town from the Dominican Republic. But Berkey was born in New Jersey, mm-hmm. from a, you know, Dominican family. Graduated over there at one of the colleges there, and came down to Atlanta to work for Emory University.
Yeah.
She was there for 14 years, a coffee lover. She told me, "Hey, you need to open Golden Drops Cafe close to Emory or around Emory, because on my breaks, I want to drink coffee with you." She could not see that. She could not see it because Berkey was diagnosed before the opening of Golden Drops in Beijing. She was diagnosed with cancer. We lost her.
I'm sorry.
Emory, she was an angel at Emory. Everyone loved Berkey's, to the point that Emory created what they call Berkey Abreu Excellence Award, that is given every year to an outstanding Emory employee that goes beyond duties to serve people. That's what, you know, Berkey's was.
And this is in her honor. This is in the honor, right?
It is. I feel that she's here every day with us.
Yeah.
And she brought me to Emory. I don't know, I mean, how she did it.
Yeah.
But one day I just crossed, you know, in front of this property that was abandoned. I turned back and the story is here.
And this is a family affair, because we're going to mm-hmm. meet your mom a little bit later, who, by the way, is going to sing. Yes.
Yeah, my mom is a songwriter, a singer.
I asked for a duet. She politely said no. With a big smile, she said no. And I said, okay. But this is a family affair.
Yes, it is.
How has the community reacted and responded to you all being here?
This is a wonderful community.
Yeah.
The Decatur community is wonderful. And Atlanta community, because we are just right there next to Atlanta. The Emory is on Atlanta, within the Atlanta district. So this community has been very supportive since day one. Actually, the landlords of this, you know, the owners of this property decided to help us since before the opening. We came from China broke, literally broke. I was living off of credit cards, and I was looking for, I could not find any property to lease. When I met this, you know, family, the owner of this building, the landlord, they decided to help us. And they said, you know what, you are your business plan and this coffee shop is we think is the business that will fit perfectly to this community.
Yeah.
And here we are.
And Victor, I have to ask, how did you all weather through the height of the pandemic? How did y'all get through that?
It was tough.
Yeah, I've been hearing that. Yeah.
I know that for most businesses, it was very tough. We closed for several months. I thought it was going to be, the end of it.
Really?
And
you thought you were going to have to close for good?
We closed because we had met the pandemic, but then financially speaking, it was, you know, for us it was really, really tough. But my strength, the human being that gave me the fierce and the courage to continue told me, you know what, we will reopen and we will do it. My mom.
And mom.
She's around here.
Can we just give mom a round of applause? Now after that, can I still do the duet? No? Still a no, Victor. Often when I have these conversations with owners and they talk about some of the challenges that come along with being a small business owner, you've had some ups and downs, but let's start with, what have you learned? What's been like the eye-opening thing for you as a small business owner here that you're still navigating through? What are those challenges? And how do you get through them?
We have gotten, you know, help from not only from my family members or, you know, my relatives, but also from the community. We always, you know, get someone who comes and, like, for example, today, there is a guy that wants to help us with the landscaping. We want to get that, you know, front of the space with beautiful, you know, plants, flowers, and he just showed up.
Is he going to do it for free?
And he's going to do it pro bono.
For free?
We got another person sitting here, DeMarcus, one of our customers. We got another person, a doctor from Emory, who's here, I think, Sen.
Yeah.
Dear. And who, right there, Dr. Sen Dear, and he went to El Salvador just a month and a half ago and shoot a video with a drone for a commercial for us. Thank you.
Wow.
And like them, we have gotten, you know, people here that wants to us to stay here.
And that means a lot to you, I know.
It means a lot to us. It means a lot. Because I've always, you know, said to myself, the more you learn of your community, people from different backgrounds, from different careers, the better you are, the stronger you are, the happier you are. And I feel it. I feel it.
That is wonderful. I want to talk about this menu, because, you know, I love food. And I love the fact that you say it's American. It's American with Latin flair to create what you call the perfect cup of coffee. I can't say, because the other coffee shops will get, and I think they're listening. God, I tell you, Victor, your coffee is it's pretty darn good. I'll get emails now. What is it about that coffee, man? What is it about that coffee that just, it has some kick to it? It's got great flavor. Tell me about this bean.
It's organic coffee that comes straight from the farm in El Salvador to us. Yeah. And it's roasted by people who put passion on it.
Oh, so you got some passion in your beans.
That's
the key.
That's the key.
Victor got passion in the beans.
That's
all right.
The key.
So if you're listening out there, coffee shops, you need to have some passion in the bean. And you also, I don't know how you all do this, but when you make the latte, it had a nice design to it. Like a What is it? How do you do that? It had a nice little...
The latte art. Well, thanks to Juan. Juan is, you know, the expert on that. Trained by the four monkeys, Alejandro, Rafael, Daniel, and Joel, Salvadorian. They have been here several times. Juan has been there several times for training. He got it. We're going to make it the U.S. barista champion.
Yeah. He's a man of many talents, too. Juan is also a... Mr. International.
Fashion model.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Let's talk about the menu, because it is inspired by your Latin heritage. What's on this menu for our listeners who are thinking about coming by? We want them to come by. What do you want them to know about your menu?
The menu is artisan. I would call it street food.
Yeah.
Fast food, but made with artisan ingredients. But the main thing, I got not only one, but two mothers cooking that food. My mom and my stepmom. What about that? Do you think that with one mom, I think is great, but what about having two? It's unbeatable.
And I have a feeling you're not even allowed in the kitchen, are you? Do you cook, Rick?
No, I don't cook.
You weren't supposed to be?
Having my mother, is from the Dominican Republic, and my stepmother from Brazil is a blessing. I mean, I cannot ask for more. I'm the happiest person on earth. You know, I cannot even explain it.
I actually have a listener that says, Rose, what is about the coffee bean? I want to hear more. El Salvador, what can you tell us?
The one that you're drinking today is called Pacamara. Mm-hmm. It's medium roast, and it's coming from a farm in El Salvador that is 1,600 meters over the sea level.
Really?
It's really, really good.
What makes for a good cup of coffee, Victor?
I would say that, you know, you have to come up with the right mixing. And, of course, the best coffee, the right coffee. If you don't get, you know, good coffee, you won't be able to make it.
What does it mean to you and your family to be here in this community? You moved from China. Obviously, it was a great decision. Sorry that it didn't work out, but I'm sure the community is very glad to have you here. But what has it meant for you all to be here in this community? And then Victor doing this with your family, man, that's got to feel good. Yeah,
huh?
That's got to feel good with your family.
Let me tell you, my family is my everything. And when I say my family, I include my friends too, because I'm like that. I mean, my friends, I make them part of my family. Otherwise, I don't call them friends.
How long you want to stay here in this location? You're not going to move like to, you know, somewhere else.
No, actually, we are. There's a surprise coming on soon, very soon, but we will stay here.
What's the surprise?
We might extend.
That's a surprise?
Oh, but I will keep it like that.
Really?
Yes. Because it just arose like a few days ago.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
This is home for you. This is where you want to be.
Yeah, we are at home. We feel at home.
And you are not just immersed in this community, but you do a lot with a lot of organizations within the Atlanta region, internationally as well.
That's correct.
You're part of a collective that...
My mother and I founded the Dominican International Association 26 years ago. But also we are part of the Atlanta Sister Cities Commission, which is the largest exchange organization in the city of Atlanta. It composes 17 countries developing ties with the city of Atlanta. And Brazil and the Dominican Republic are the only two Latin countries within that program. Wow. So I lead the version between Atlanta and the Dominican Republic, my homeland, and then someone else, you know, the one from... But we got countries from Europe, 5 countries. We got 2 from Africa, Nigeria and Benin. We got 3 from Asia, Taiwan, South Korea and Japan. In Europe, Germany, we got Greece, we got France, United Kingdom, and Belgium.
And you were telling me before we came on air,
Romania,
a great story about Maynard Jackson. You were telling me a story about that.
He was involved in that program. Gave me the great opportunity of sitting with Mayor Maynard Jackson at Atlanta City Hall at a luncheon, and spend, you know, that event with him sitting on the same table talking. He was such a wonderful individual.
Yeah.
I was introduced to him by Mayor Bill Campbell.
Yeah, wow, that's a great story.
Then we met Mayor Charlie Franklin,
yeah.
Mayor Bottoms, Mayor Reed, now Mayor Dickens.
You have talked about your family. You talked about the importance of being in this community. As we wrap up, can you even imagine not being here now? Like when you think back to when you started in China, you thought, okay, this is going to be it. But when you think about, wow, can you imagine not being here?
I don't think so. I mean, even she's on heaven, Verity, she planted us here.
Yeah?
I mean...
It was divine.
It was divine. It was divine. She was the person who brought birds flying around her, literally at home. I saw that myself.
Yeah.
And then she was the one who first told me, you need to open that coffee shop around Emory campus, where I work. And she's in heaven, we are here. So her wish became true.
What a lovely story. Thank you so much. Victor Ramirez. And again, the drink of the day is the Roscott Mocha Mint Latte. Just letting y'all know, just want to get that out there. Victor, thank you so much for taking time. I really appreciate it. We're going to, again, have a good surprise for folks when your mom is actually going to sing something a little bit later in the program, so we appreciate it. You're listening to Closer Looks Live, Coffee Conversation with Roscott. Golden Drops Cafe, Indicator. We're back after this.
Thank you.
Day and through the night, bumping zapping Roger, probably rotten and something proper, but it's a bother, cause our kids won't have their fathers, but we're the flowers, cause they tried to bury me, but they didn't see that we were the perfect seed. Yep. Yo, this is for
my riders. Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
You love free. And at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
So they talking about how they want us to go back to Mexico. I said, okay, let me take you back then. I wanna go to Mexico, dancing in a festival, wearing amber necklaces and everything's incredible. Going to the market for the fresh fruits and vegetables. Grandmama
and
with her hands.
Continues now from WABE in Atlanta. Actually, we're broadcasting live from Golden Drops Cafe, located at 1788 Claremont Road, right here in Decatur, Georgia. A big thank you to Victor Mariachi. That is his music that we're gonna be playing today. And Victor will be profiled in Closer Looks Hip Hop at 50 series a little bit later in the year. So big ups to Victor for that. This is our monthly series, Coffee Conversations with Roscott, in partnership with the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta, where we talk to elected officials, civic and organizers, community organizers, you name it, we want to talk to them. Today, we're focusing on those topics and issues that are important to the Latino community, those quality of life issues for Georgia's Latino population. Doing something a little bit different because for the rest of the broadcast, I'm going to talk to these fine folks. They've been on the program before, but I got to tell you, when we look for organizations, and there are a lot of organizations that are doing great work, so I don't want organizations to email me and say, Rose, you never had me on the show. We'll get to all of you. But we wanted to have a very diverse group of representation in terms of the organization, so I am honored to welcome, first of all, let's welcome Gigi Pedraza, Latino Community Fund.
Thank you for having me.
Santiago Marquez with the Latin American Association. Melissa Urbina with Sir Familia. And Andres Pereira, Program Manager for Civic Engagement and Community Organizer at the Galeo Impact Fund. Thank you all for taking time. I just want to take a moment to say this, and I hope I don't get emotional, because a couple years ago, during a really rough time when I lost some family members, Gigi sent me a fruit basket. But I gotta tell you, opening the door and getting that fruit basket meant so much for me. So Gigi, I don't know if I've ever told you, thank you so much for that. It just meant the world to me. And that's what community is about, right? Community is about being there for each other, being there for your community, whether folks look like you or not. That's what it's all about. That's what we want to highlight. And so I am going to start with you, Gigi, because when we talk about the quality of life for Georgia's Latino community, often now we're in this phase where what were things like pre-pandemic and now? That's kind of a metric that folks are using. What would you say, and it could be an overview in terms of issues that are facing Georgia's Latino community post-pandemic, and were they even, are they getting better or worse? Where are we, in your opinion?
Yeah, thank you, Rose, for that. I think that some of the issues that we saw have continued. For example, access to healthcare continues to be an incredible challenge, exacerbated now by a huge amount of need for mental health services that are just, you know, non-existent. And, you know, I'm sure Belisa will add more to that. Access to food, to nutritious quality food, is also very limited. There is still very little outreach that gets to our community from, you know, the majority of organizations in the anti-hunger space, and that's something that we are trying to advocate and work on, make sure that we strengthen processes and that we design for all people, not only for people that, you know, speak English or have vehicles, etc. And education is also a key thing. So for us, you know, K-12 quality education for English learners, which is a lot of our community, my kids, for example, right, is just lacking. And in DeKalb County, where we are right now, only 2.3% of the over 15,000 students in DeKalb County School District exit the program. That means 2.3% learn English enough to graduate the program. So consider that 90% of all of our children under 18 are American citizens. Mm-hmm. Regardless of how you feel about immigration, this is a disservice to American citizens that we're not teaching them English.
Wow.
So it's lots of, you know, we could talk about this for 3 days.
I know, we're gonna get some of that, but you mentioned access to healthcare, access to quality food. Andres, what do you wanna add to that post-pandemic?
I'll mention affordable housing has been another issue for our community, but you know, our community is very diverse and we're suffering from many of the same things that the rest of our community in Georgia is suffering from.
So affordable housing. And Santiago?
I would say poverty. We, you know, as a whole, our community is very hardworking and resilient and come here to contribute, not take away, despite, when, you know, some of the messages we hear. But really elevating our community out of poverty and that economic mobility piece, getting them to fully participate in the American dream, mm-hmm. We have a long way to go there, and I think the pandemic really set them back.
Okay, so we've gone from housing, poverty. Belisa?
I have to echo, you know, what has been said and elevate, you know, the issues with mental health is something that we would never even foreseen seeing something like what we are seeing now. And then the number of kids, of our Latino kids, that never came back to school after the pandemic.
That's right.
We lost hundreds or even thousands of kids from the school rosters of kids that now are helping support their families, are involved in doing adult roles, and never came back to school.
Let's focus in on education for a moment then. What are some of the priorities you all are doing at Ser Familia to help in that gap? Because if you mentioned that these students are needed to help, and a lot of the households are generational. You know, you got the grandmothers and the parents and then the kids. So how are you all helping? Are there initiatives that you all have to kind of help that?
Yes, during the pandemic, we started opening family resource centers. We call them cafes. It's an evidence-based national model. And what our cafes are doing is providing a safe space for families. After-school tutoring, piano lessons, art classes. And then we always use a multi-generational approach. You know, we have to involve everybody, the grandmas, the parents, whoever is that nuclear family that you identify as your family, because we cannot serve the children in isolation. If we want them to achieve the goals that we have for them, we cannot serve the child by him or herself. You have to involve the family and create plans that support that family in a very holistic approach.
The last time we spoke, you talked about mental health services for youth and because of the suicide rate. That, and I don't think a lot of people knew that, about the suicide rate among Latino youth. That you all started to see this trend after the pandemic. Is that due to sort of the obstacles with the pandemic? That's why we're seeing it?
Yes, the kids feel so alone, so unsupported. They are just, you know, feeling roles of adults. They are the interpreters. They are helping, you know, earn money for the family. They're in charge of finances. And they feel like they don't have anywhere to go. So no wonder they feel, you know, anxious, depressed. We are seeing, you know, that was a problem that existed before the pandemic. It just got exacerbated. We are very rigorous in data collection and data analysis. And we are seeing 3 times the number of kids with suicidal ideation. And then the services are so very few that as an organization, we feel very alone in that space.
Santiago, you're nodding your head in agreement.
Yeah. Well, it hit my family personally. I was sharing with Melissa, and thank God for the work that she's doing. And it's really needed in our community. I mean, my 16-year-old daughter, I had to pull her from her school and put her in an online academy because she was having so many issues with depression, anxiety, body imaging, social media, and I think the pandemic really exacerbated all of that. She's doing better now, thank goodness. But I've experienced it myself. And then with the families that we serve, we see it, right? Mm-hmm. And we send a lot of people over to Belisa's organization, families that are experiencing. And it's not something that a lot of families talk about. Yeah. It's not talked about in the community enough either.
So how do you get, and we talk about this in the Black community too, the stigma sometimes that comes with, and I know we're trying to move away from using that word stigma,
right?
But it is there. And so you try to get people to understand this is not, this is every community, every household probably deals with it. How do you get that message and that campaign out to households and let them know they have these resources?
Well, on our end, we, you know, we promote, we spend a lot of money on marketing, and we try to bring educational workshops and speakers, and we have a great relationship with Ser Familia. So the LAA has youth services, but we are not in the mental health space. And for us, it's just being having all those referrals and warm referrals to be able to send the families to, because the LAA tends to be one of the first places where people mm-hmm. go to. It's important for us to know what we can do and can't do, but who can help them.
Andres, I want to get your viewpoint in terms of how do we get elected officials also. I mean, I'm sure they are, elected officials are involved, but is there enough? I mean, I think this is the first time we've had in the legislature, we have a Hispanic caucus for the first time. So are you all making sure that elected officials from the community, that they are addressing as best they can issues?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one component is we do have that direct engagement with our community, which I think isolation can oftentimes feed into this issue. And being in community, being connected can empower members of our community. And we do that through our direct, you know, leadership programs, the Galeo Institute for Leadership, through our sister organization, Galeo, which has led many Latino leaders through. At Galeo Impact Fund, we have El Pueblo Unido Project, which is a free program accessible through Zoom to everybody, through Latinos, to empower them and connect them with their communities. And then, but you're right, the major factor is the power that our policy and public elected officials have to grant greater funding, right, to our public schools, to mental health access. And that's the type of advocacy and important work that we prioritize and we try to push our elected officials to be accountable on.
And Gigi, you've told me before in the past, that was the whole reason why you started the Latino Community Fund, because there was a need for some type of collective that could reach out to smaller organizations. And, you know, Belisa talked about a holistic approach, but it also sounds like it takes a holistic approach from different organizations to come together.
That's right. The issues that our community faces are very complex and are structural. But our assets are also fantastic, yeah. right? And I don't want to, you know, lose track of how wonderful the community is and how many of our organizations, and you know, Belisa is the founder of the organization, just like I am. The majority of leaders of our organizations are founders of the organizations because we saw a need and we decided mm-hmm. to try to do something to make it better. So there is great initiative. And so we do play a role as conveners to ensure that we collaborate and talk to each other so that we can support each other in addressing those issues. And the funding, though.
Yeah.
The funding, the private yeah. funding that comes.
You don't need to talk to me about funding. I work in public media.
That's right. You know about it.
We're probably going to ask y'all to open up your wallets before we leave. So.
Yeah. But that's the thing, right? Latinos in nationally get between 1% or 2% of the total funding in the country.
That's a spoil.
Right? Yeah. And Georgia gets 0.7% of that 1% funding, even though we are one of the fastest growing Latino communities and, you know, almost 1.1 million.
Why do you think that is?
I think people are not afraid of us. I think that we are building our political power, we're building our voices, we're telling our stories, but it's emerging in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And so with many of us here in the table, we're working to make sure that changes. Because we deserve the investment, we're human beings like every other human beings. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we think about equity, we're 11%, 10% of the community. I would love to see 10% of all the funding coming to us.
Wow, let's continue the funding. I love this conversation. Where's the primary source of funding that your organization comes from? Is it private donations? Obviously, the philanthropy. And let me say this. Atlanta has a wonderful philanthropic community. They mm-hmm. do across the board. Now, in terms of everybody getting a little piece of it, that's a whole other mm-hmm. conversation. But where do you all get the source of your funding mostly comes from?
Sure. We try to create a healthy mix of, you know, government funding and private funding. We get a little bit over half of our money from the federal government, which seems to be surprising to many because there is a myth that you cannot use federal dollars to serve families that might be undocumented or mixed status. That is not true. If you have the right person looking at the right sources of funding, you can create a healthy mix. Ser Familia, as a principle, we do not open a program if we cannot serve at the same level documented and undocumented and mixed status families. That's principle for us.
That's an issue. You agree, Santiago, that there's this perception that, well, they're primarily serving undocumented households, but that's not exactly true.
Right. Yeah, I would say that, well, first of all, the LAA serves everybody, anybody right. who walks in, Hispanic or not, documented or not, doesn't matter. You're going to get services. I agree with Belisa's. We also get 50%, like 50% of our funding comes from government sources. Mm-hmm. The other 50% is private. And I agree with what she's saying. There are some grants that are very restrictive mm-hmm. that actually tie your hands. And so you got to try to find the right funding that allows you to do the work and not turn people away.
How do you maneuver through that if folks are saying, well, 50%, you're kind of, and I use this term, handcuffed yeah. in who you can serve. But let's be really clear, too. There is this perception, well, you know, if they're undocumented, then perhaps those services could go somewhere else.
Yeah.
You just said to me, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But how do you get that message across?
We're in the people business, you know, and what Gigi said is true. I mean, we try to treat all human beings the same with dignity and respect. And we don't care where you come from or we don't care what your status is. You know, our role is to try to help and facilitate. And if we can serve you internally, we will. If we can't, then we give you a referral to the best of our ability. But that's not our role. Our job is not to. Now, we do have immigration services at the LAA.
Okay.
To try to help. And our big focus now on immigration is citizenship. You know, really, we'll still take some removal defense cases and other cases. But we're really having a big push now on citizenship. We have 4 immigration lawyers on staff, so we do the best that we can to try to help with our resources. But for us, it's about people. It's mm-hmm. about helping people.
We had a conversation not too long ago. You yes. talked about with some changes federally, and with you were serving, I think, 300 families.
We served, yeah, about 700 people, about 300 families that came, new arrivals.
New arrivals.
Yes.
That number is going to increase.
Yes.
To what did you tell me?
We're preparing for about 1,000 this year, just based on what we saw last year and trying to increase, you know, what we're hearing from a coalition of organizations that we're working with from what's happening in the border. We haven't quite seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
We've never stopped since everything happened last year. We've never stopped seeing new arrivals. Mm-hmm. It's been a trickle.
Yeah.
It started to pick up a little bit, but we're thinking we're going to see about 40 to 50 over the next week. That's the information we're getting from organizations that we're working with on the border.
Gigi, your organization as well, you all expected to have to increase services because the demand is increasing because of new arrivals?
Yeah, we are not serving directly new arrivals, but I do would like to say that new arrivals have never stopped coming for centuries, and that, you know, immigration is something that has and will always continue to happen. And currently, for example, there's over 1,500 undocumented minors in Georgia receiving services because this will not stop. It's part of life. And so this is a made-up crisis by our own government that we have created, right, as U.S. government. So, of course, we will be part of, you know, the solution. But this is not something that will ever stop because just like, you know, any living being looks for safety. You know, that's what we do but we do what we have to do to survive.
Gigi just called this a made-up crisis. This is not new. This has been, folks have been trying to come to America, to Georgia, for a better way of life for a long time. How do you maneuver through the political back and forth of folks making this a bigger issue and a divisive issue as well, Andres?
Absolutely. We do our best to educate our community, to educate elected officials on the facts, and that is that undocumented people, you know, they're fleeing, you know, poverty, dangerous situations back home. And when they come here, you know, they don't receive any sort of benefits or money, right? These are dangerous lies that are often spread. And we hold people who spread these lies accountable as best we can. The truth is that these undocumented workers are skilled laborers who often are the backbone of our agricultural industry, the poultry industry here in Georgia, up in Dalton with the carpet weaving industry, right? They're an integral part of our economy, of our society, and their lack of path to citizenship is not only just a citizenship issue, right? It's a labor issue, it's a human rights issue, and it's something that we're constantly advocating. The National Immigration Forum just released a report that there's 80% bipartisan support for immigration reform. So this is something that is long overdue that we need to take action on.
80%, but the United States has not been able to solve its immigration problem for decades now. This is well before Biden, Obama, Trump, well before then. This has been an ongoing problem. But then you say 80%, there is an 80% bipartisan spirit. So why doesn't things get done? Why aren't things getting done?
Absolutely. It is so frustrating to see a minority of the U.S. population kind of stop the progress that is necessary on this issue. And right, and it's a community that's very vulnerable and easy to ignore by our elected officials if we don't push them on this issue, right? Because they don't vote. They because they don't have status, they can't advocate or sue or, you know, do all these things. So it makes it that much harder. So it's our work to kind of push them on this issue.
And when we come back, I'll talk more about civic engagement and, of course, an issue that everybody is grappling with, which is affordable housing and transit. This is Closer Look in our monthly series, Coffee Conversations. When we come back, there's more with our panel. Thank you.
Let me introduce you. Welcome to the USA, the acronym for accolades. This is the ruta, the seeds that was planted, benefiting from the frutas, from USAs to hurrahs. This is how we move now. Yo, going from the bottom up, palabras that was bottled up is going off like a rocket launch, ready to erupt and crush it. Yo, from the negativity that was passed on, the sensitivity in the classroom, to now seeing the glasses half full and adding it to my shampoo, to get rid of this dandruff, trash covered in fast food, changing my diet to tofu, using plastic and I passed through. That's shoot the question mark. Walked up in an Asian mark, road rage and it's rated R, the gas capped in a mason jar.
And Closer Looks Coffee Conversation with Rose Scott is back, broadcasting live from Golden Drops Cafe. I've got some emails I want to read for a second, and one says, Rose, you know, for years I've lived across the street from Golden Drops Cafe before it opened. At the time, it was a barbecue restaurant. Didn't do that well, but please thank Victor for being in the neighborhood. So, yeah. Yes, thank you, Victor. And another says, Rose, do they have oat? I guess oat milk. I'm assuming they do. I don't know. I'm not back there, but if not, yeah, they got it. Yeah, there you go. All right. Before we move into civic engagement and mobilizing, Gigi, you were speaking off air here. You said you wanted to make something very clear that you wanted folks to know.
Yes, thank you, Rose. First of all, let me tell you how happy I am to listen to Victor Mariachi. I'm a big fan. Yeah. Thank you for playing his music. I just wanted to point out that folks at the border, unlike what you may hear, are actually following the laws of the U.S. These are folks that have been sitting, waiting there for 3-4 years for their turn to present their asylum case. So these are not undocumented people that are crossing the border illegally. These are folks that have been waiting to get a turn to plead their case. So they are actually following our laws. Whenever they get to Georgia or to any other state, they have gone through the entire legal process that allows them to present their case, and they are waiting for a resolution. And that is extremely important because, you know, the funding that, you know, we are getting to process these folks, it's funding that has been allocated and determined by the laws of this country and international asylum laws. They are simply following their human rights.
Yeah, right. I agree with that. Yeah.
Santiago, you want to add something?
I do, and I appreciate Gigi lifting that up. And in many cases, this is their only recourse to apply for asylum, right? And to Gigi's point, when the folks that we saw last year, some of them had spent 6 months traveling to the border by foot. And so by the time they get to us, they have essentially been almost homeless or homeless for almost a year. And they're coming with nothing, but they have no other legal recourse. This is it, right?
6 months.
Yes. Yeah, in many cases, they traveled by foot 6 months. Last year, we saw a huge wave of Venezuelans who traveled all the way to Mexico, and many of them had to travel by foot. Then they had to wait at the border, you know, living in makeshift camps in some cases. They have not had a home in maybe over a year, right? Not had a good meal or not had security in a long time. And again, I'll reiterate, I'll you know, echo what Gigi is saying. I believe that these folks love the United States so much mm-hmm. that they're willing to go through all of that just to get into this country. I mean, these would be great Americans. These are the types of folks that we want to welcome into the United States, in my opinion.
Lisa, you want to add anything to that?
Sure. Sometimes people do not realize that our immigration system is broken. Actually, my oldest son happens to be an immigration attorney, so this is a conversation that happens very often in our house. Mm-hmm. And sadly, you know, for many, you know, of the people that get here, as Santiago and Gigi said, there's not another option. And for many of the families that are here, many of them, they were even kind of enticed by companies to come. We are serving a specific community in Cobb County that we have seen, you know, a shift in who lives there mm-hmm. based on who the construction companies are bringing to the state. Mm-hmm. So many of them just show up here. You know, there's a lot of forces moving yeah. behind all of this, and people do not realize that they cannot just stand in the line and say, oh, I'm here. I just need my visa. That doesn't happen that way.
I want to shift for a moment and talk about an issue that is impacting all of us, which is affordable housing. And we know with the average rent in Atlanta, which people tell me, oh, Rose, it's going down. It's $2,200 a month. Okay. I don't know where y'all work, but $2,200 a month for one or two bedroom, that's affordable, Gigi?
Not affordable. So housing affordability is a real issue, as well as tenant rights. Mm-hmm. And so for our community, because of mixed status or just lack of access to legal services, it is also a huge issue the fact that landlords take advantage and don't provide safe homes or rental locations. So I have been in apartments, and you know these rows, where mm-hmm. holes were so big that raccoons could come in, mm-hmm. mold,
yeah.
you know, it's covering the apartments. And this happens everywhere. It happens in Gainesville. It happens in Pooler, in coastal Georgia. It happens in Beaufort Highway. It happens in Clark County. It's a statewide. So housing affordability, but for us at the Latino Community Fund, we're focused on know your rights mm-hmm. and really to support tenants, keep landlords accountable so that they are able to live at least in safe homes, which is the homes that they have.
But Lisa, the legislature, they've tried to pass some legislation, and for years now, we know that Georgia has been considered a, quote, you know, landlord-friendly state. There's been some minor movement in terms of legislation, but not enough, many folks tell me.
No, we have a huge problem. I absolutely agree with Gigi's point. And what people do not realize is that all of these issues that we have been discussing, they're linked. When I say that we are seeing two or three times the number of children who are sexually abused, it's a direct result. Not that people are worse. It's just that a child is going to be abused by people they know. Mm-hmm. So if the child now lives with seven or eight adults, it's a sad probabilities game. Mm-hmm. So we do not understand that all of these decisions, when you are living in a place where you don't have any personal space, of course you're going to be depressed and anxious and all mm-hmm. of it. So this is a cascade of problems. When you have seven children in school, there's not enough bandwidth for them to do mm-hmm. homework or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So housing affordability has other repercussions on the community.
And whether it's housing affordability, which might also mean that's linked to transit issues mm-hmm. or transit, you know, obstacles, and then also health and wellness, it's all about, it's circular, it all connects. So Andres, when we talk about then mobilizing organizations, you all are here together, civic engagement, getting folks involved, you all have organizations, and not just with health and wellness, but environmental justice. And I think often folks think environmental issues, they tend to leave out communities of color. And I gotta tell you, I recently moderated a panel, and I was so happy because everybody on the panel was a person of color, and they were all women, and that has never happened in all of the panels that I've moderated about the environment. So folks need to know that, don't think that this is an issue that just doesn't include folks of color.
No, environmental justice is one of our policy priorities at the Impact Fund, And our sister organization, Galeo, they started an initiative called Vamos Pa Fuera to get Latinos outdoors and engaging with nature and advocacy for environmental justice, because we know that the climate crisis affects all of us, but it will disproportionately affect low-income people of color who are already affected by the system, right? Mm-hmm. And then we do that advocacy in many ways. One of our big ambitious projects right now is called Puente para la Gente, or Bridge for the People. And we know that there's, you know, our community has grown and the needs have changed. And we need to identify and quantify those needs and issues and priorities so that we can advocate properly and talk to our elected officials. So we started this survey with our partners to ensure that our methodology was correct. Mm-hmm. And you can find it at puentesurvey.com. And it's available for everybody. If you're not Latino, it's a little bit shorter. But we're trying to collect that data so that we can present it to our elected officials next year.
As we begin to wrap up and get ready for our performance here, real quickly, we're going into 2024, big election year. Y'all get ready. That's all I'm going to say. What are y'all going to focus on for 2024?
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Local elections are happening this year, and that's what our power is. That's what we can – we have a lot of – opportunity to make a change. So make sure to vote in your local elections this year. Get involved now, and then next year we gotta get ready to, you know, turn out and make the change.
Gigi, priorities?
100% agree. I think local elections, we have elections every year, and we have thousands of kids turning 18 that are American citizens that have lived what it feels to be affected by policies but not have a voice. So this is the time to show up and, you know, take up space.
All right. Santiago.
Yeah, around civic engagement for us is education, information, encouraging people to get connected with Galeo, LCF, register to vote. But we also, with our youth services, there's a lot of push, you know, to get involved and get engaged.
But Lisa, I'll give you the last word.
For us, our strongest alliance is with the Latino Community Fund. We are very, very close, and we're going to support, you know, their efforts when it comes to civic engagement along with the other partners. But we are keeping an eye on any issues that are related to education and mental health, which are the two biggest things that we are, you know, checking on right now.
All right. Belisa, Santiago, Andres, Gigi, thank you all for being here. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
For the community, I really appreciate it, and I'm just giddy right now because we're gonna get a performance. Where's mi madre? Where's mom? Come on over here, mom. Where's mom? Now, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong. Victor will help me out here. How many songs has mom written? Hey, mom. How many songs?
My mom got that I know of, because I have paid the taxes of, you know, that registration of that. I thought it was like more than 70 songs. She corrected me today. She said, I got more that you need to register. She got more than 150 songs composed by her, and some of them are with music already recorded.
And she's going to sing a cappella, right? She's going to sing a cappella, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Now, before we let mom sing, I just want to say thank you to everyone. Soria Vanderwerth, Shelly Canavy, back at our WABE studio, our producers here. A big welcome to WABE's new Vice President of Audio, Scotty Crow. He's in the house. Special thanks to the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. And, of course, Golden Drops Cafe, to Victor and the entire community here. And I'm going to say, take it away, Kalila.
Víctor, dile, las canciones me llegan a mi mente con la melodía y con la letra.
When I write a song, I do that. When I write a song, I just follow my heart and my mind and start writing them.
Pienso en alguna pareja que está muy contenta o que está disgustada, la llevo a mi mente.
I think about those scenes of, you know, love scenes between a couple, and I make that a melody.
Esta es de una pareja que estaban separados de cama y que yo quería que se juntaran, y al final ella le decía, vete, yo sé que soy la culpable.
Then it is, this song is about a couple that she met. They were separated, and she told her husband, leave. I love you, but Live, be free.
Let's go.
Por las noches intranquilas, pero escasas son las horas necesarias para yo poder vivir. Tempranito yo te siento que tú quieres despertar como siempre para salir de mi cama y ponerte a caminar. No duermo, no me siento estar tranquila, pues mi vida se aniquila, yo no puedo ni dormir. Tú no me tienes, no te tengo, yo impaciente, tú renuente, no te dejo descansar. Ya no puedo yo vivir, tú no puedes continuar viviendo así, sin amor, sin amor.
The song is called Sin Amor, Without Love.
El 23 de junio tengo una exposición literaria de todas mis canciones aquí.
On June the 23rd, we are celebrating her birthday here at our terrace, and she's inviting all of you to be here. The 23rd of June.
Thank you so much, Victor.
Oh, she got also not only ballad, but merengue and bachata written by her.
Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE. Thank you, everybody, for coming out.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.